So today I want to continue in Acts of the Apostles, and I want to tell you the story of three people trying to love Jesus with the help of two visions. We've got Simon the Tanner, we've got Simon Peter, and we've got this guy named Cornelius. And I want to talk about each of them in turn and look at their lives and see how they might be an icon for us as the church that moves forward in the world, as a church that is praying to be filled with the Spirit. So first I want to look at Simon the Tanner. When I was a chemist back what feels like 100 years ago, I was a representative. I was a paint and coatings specialist. It's just a fancy term for I tried to sell paint and coatings to as many customers as possible. And one of our major suppliers was a company named Rome and Haas. Rome and Haas got their start in the early 20th century by being a leather tanning goods specialty. There's a guy named Otto Rome in 1907 who smelled the local tannery and thought he could do a better job of it. Because for most of human history, to be a tanner is one of the most disgusting occupations you can imagine. Now, to make a leather work, there are two things that go into leather, and can you guess what those two things are? Any guesses? What? Uric acid. And in the ancient world, you would get those things from pee, right? And you would take that pee and you'd ferment it in dog poo. So as the rabbis wrote about this, they made lots of restrictions for where tanners could be. A tanner could not be a high priest. Tanner could never be a king. Even if that tanner had only worked one day in the industry, it was such a disgusting occupation that if a woman was to marry a tanner, even knowing that he was a tanner, after one day she could divorce him with no other reason besides that he was a tanner. And the Levirate marriage code, which says that if a man dies and he leaves a widow, the brother was obligated to marry that woman. If she was married to a tanner and the man dies, she was under no obligation to marry her brother because they both stink. So when Peter goes to the house of Simon the Tanner, he likely remembered the words of Jesus, that you are to go to all people, and when you're spreading the gospel, make no consideration for who is willing to be a host for you. So I imagine when Peter went to Simon the Tanner's home, he was feeling pretty good about himself. Like, well, you know, I'm living the gospel message. I'm associating with people who aren't really well-liked in society. I'm even staying at a tanner. And he's probably patting himself on the back for being such a good Christian or such a good follower of Jesus. Now, the only problem with this is Simon the Tanner is probably a wealthy tanner because he has a gateway and he has a patio and he's got some nice digs. But he's kind of rich in a way that's not acceptable to most people. And so Peter is going up to the roof, and I don't know if the tannery was downstairs or not, probably not, but if it was, the roof is probably the only place you'd want to go. Because tanners, just one last detail, because I just think this is just so gross and interesting, that the tanners would take this fermented mess, they would take the skins that had been scraped off of their hair, and it was their job, they'd almost pay somebody to do it, to take their shoes off and to kind of go traipsing through this muck as they press the uric acid and the other chemicals, the tannins, into the leather so that it could become leather. So Simon Peter goes upstairs, probably to get away from the pew smell, and he begins praying. And Simon has a vision, and this vision is of a sheet that comes down, and it's got all sorts of creepy crawlies, reptiles, and things that, according to the Old Testament, would have been abhorrent to eat. I mean, it's like God coming to a good, righteous Jew and saying, I got this pork barbecue sandwich that you're just going to love. And if we can start cooking the pork chops tonight, then that's what you need to do, Peter. Now, why does God give Peter a vision about the things he's supposed to eat? Because it's not really about the things he's supposed to eat. It's about the people he's supposed to be in fellowship with. Because it was to prepare Peter to receive Cornelius' invitation. So Simon's having his vision over here in the stinky tanner house, and then Cornelius is having a messenger who comes to him and says, Cornelius, I want you to invite this man named Simon Peter into your home. And so God's preparing Cornelius to invite Peter, and God's inviting Peter to receive the invitation, and it needed that kind of visionary intervention for this to happen, because no good Jew would go to a non-Jew's home and actually have fellowship with them. Now, a Jew might preach at somebody and tell them what terrible people they are, but no good Jew like Peter would go and actually eat with the unclean infidels. But Cornelius, on the other side of the spectrum, is held up as a picture of righteousness, as a picture of what it means to be a follower of God. In Acts chapter 10, it says, at Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. One day, at about 3 p.m, he had a vision, and he distinctly saw an angel of God and said to him, Cornelius. Cornelius stared at him in fear and said, what is it, Lord? The angel answers, your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa and bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea. It needed an angel for this to happen, because it would never occur to Cornelius to invite such a guy into his home, because had he done so, almost certainly Peter would have said, oh no, us good Jews don't ever do such a thing like that. But it seems like God works in doubles, like Saul, and who became Paul because of Ananias. Cornelius and Peter together allowed for the Spirit to move amongst them. There's a website that I really like. It's called Reading Acts. And it says, it was curious that Peter hesitates with Cornelius in chapter 10. Because he's like, I'm still not sure if this vision thing is really working, but I think I'll trust God and do it. And he says, this is a testimony to how far Jews and Gentiles are separated culturally. Peter has no problem staying in the home of a tanner, yet is hesitant to enter the home of a Gentile God-fearer who is likely more clean with respect to the law than the tanner, because Cornelius was still an uncircumcised Gentile. See, God's doing something all through Acts of the Apostles that's really important to remember. God's sort of like laying track as the train is going down the track. You know, 3,000 people at a time are coming into the community, and the leadership, who are almost all Jews, are going, what? How do we process this? How do we deal with this? How do we make sense of this? And this story in Acts 10 and 11 is an emblematic of what God does throughout all of Acts of the Apostles. It's telling us that Peter and Paul and everybody else is trying to figure out, what does it mean to be in relationship with God? What does it mean to be a covenant community? And what things do we have to let go of? What things do we have to hold on to for us to still be followers of Jesus? And so Peter, I love Peter. I mean, he's my man. He always gets it right at first and then screws it up later. This is what Peter does. This is what I do. I'm really good at that. First three steps, man, I got full confidence. I know what I'm doing. Five steps into it, I have no idea what I'm doing. Because Peter goes to Cornelius' home. The Spirit knits them together. Many people are baptized. Peter thinks, this is amazing. I want to keep doing this. And then people start giving him grief. Oh, Peter, what are you doing eating with those uncircumcised, disgusting, non-Jewish people? And he goes, oh, well, maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't be eating with them. And it goes to a head in Galatians chapter 2. Because Paul, who is never a subtle guy, sees what's going on with Peter. You know, Peter had first had his vision. He begins eating with those who are not Jews. He's filled with the Spirit. He thinks it's great. He loves what's going on. And then, because people give him grief, he pulls back. And then Paul in Galatians chapter 2 says, you moron, how dare you, who think that you have the Spirit of God, eat with only Jews now when you should be eating with everybody? So Peter got it right, then he got it wrong, and then he got it right. And it took an incredibly embarrassing moment in front of a bunch of people being dressed down by Paul for him to finally get it right. That God is working in his life, God is working in the church's life, to constantly redraw the boundaries of who is in and who is out. Now, I think that's important for us as a church today because we can say that we are a welcoming church. The Episcopal Church's door is open to all people, but nobody cares. I mean, let me be really blunt with you all. The culture does not support open-door ministry. The culture does not support open-door ministry because we are doing a great job of being a place of hospitality and welcome. But we're also not getting out there and dealing with Cornelius in the world, having fellowship with him in the world, and then we wonder why people aren't coming to church. Because the culture doesn't support our ministry. We've got a great facility, we've got a great campus, but the biggest and most important part of our ministry is to go and have a meal with the Corneliuses of the world, to go and have fellowship, to really care about those people who are different from us. There's a guy named Millennial Pastor, which I can't stand that label, but that's what he calls himself. He's the Millennial Pastor, and he's 28 years old and full of himself in ways that I'm not full of myself ever. But the Millennial Pastor says, and I think he's right on, that the culture today is not a social support culture. In other words, having having food and having great programs and having a great facility is really important, but it's not the most important thing. People under 35 years old don't really come to church so they can have a community. They get community thrown in, but what they want to hear about is Jesus. Because if they're coming in here, they're swimming upstream against everybody else around them, and if we aren't talking about Jesus, then why do they care? He likens it to like a little league soccer team. It'd be like the church who gets together and they at one point in time played soccer. At one point in time, they all got together and every Saturday they went out and they kicked the ball around. But at some point, the little league team decided that the soccer was kind of annoying. So what they're going to do is get together and have snacks. They're not going to play soccer anymore, but they're going to get together and have snacks. And they're going to meet every week. And they're going to get together every week, and they're still going to have donut holes, and they're going to talk about how great it was when they played soccer. That's what often the church does. We assume a social support culture, and we forget that the reason that the church exists is because of Jesus. The reason that we are here is because of Jesus. The only reason that we exist is because of Jesus. And if we want to reach out to the Corneliuses, the young and the hip and the bearded and the ones who have toast on Saturday afternoons. I don't know why toast is such a big deal for millennials, but it is for a lot of them. I was talking to a friend of mine in San Francisco, and they have toast on Saturday mornings. That's weird to me, but okay, whatever. But we are called to preach and teach Jesus. And if we want this church to exist for the generations to come, we have to remember that that is our vocation. We can have all the social supports. We can do great fellowship. We can do great Christian education. We can do dramas that are wonderful. We can talk about how inclusive we are. But unless we've got Jesus at the center of our ministry, we have gotten severely off the mark. We have missed the story of Acts of the Apostles. We have lost our edge. So my invitation to you is think about how this story, Simon the Tanner, who stinks, but welcome Simon Peter into his home, who has a vision, who then meets Cornelius, who had a parallel vision, and then the relationship that developed between Simon Peter and Cornelius magnified and changed the trajectory of the church and allowed them to become the church that we have received today. It's because of Peter's work, through the power of the Holy Spirit, that we're even talking about this stuff, that we're even talking about we have a church that is open to all people. So my challenge to you is if you are a Cornelius and you live a righteous and God-fearing life, but you're not so sure about the church and you kind of think, well, that's all right. We desperately need you in our community to remind us that Jesus is at the center of our mission. And if you're like Peter, who's kind of satisfied with his own spiritual life, was doing some good stuff, working and doing the work of the gospel, you need a vision. You need a vision of Jesus to transform your lives, to transform my life, so that we could put Jesus at the center of our ministry, at the center of our hearts, at the center of our devotion. So whatever it is, it's all about Jesus, all the time, everywhere, and every place. Amen.